The story is told of a young man who treated his parents in a very devious manner. When his parents were of an age when they could no longer work and needed his care and sustenance, he said to them, "I will not look after you. I am giving the money I would use to help you. I'm giving it to the church. And because it's for God, I will not be dishonoring you. And I will be blessed." Can you imagine the shock on the faces of this couple as their son and said these words to them? Who would look after them, pay for their medical bills, their food and shelter? And all this was being done in the name of religion, in the name of God. How could he feel that giving this money to God would be a blessing to him? What would you say to this young man? What might Jesus say? The story is found in Mark chapter 7, verses 5 through 13. Verse 5, "And the Pharisees and the scribes asked him, 'Why do your disciples not walk according to the traditions of the elders, but eat with defiled hands?' And he said to them, 'Well did Isaiah prophesy of you hypocrites, as it is written, "This people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. In vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. You leave the commandment of God and hold to the tradition of men.' And he," Jesus, "said to them, 'You have a fine way of rejecting the commandments of God in order to establish your tradition. For Moses said, "Honor your father and your mother," and "Whoever reviles father or mother must surely die. But you say, if a man tells his father or mother, "Whatever you would have gained from me is korban, that is, given to God," then you no longer permit him to do anything for his father or mother, thus making void the word of God by your tradition that you have handed down. And many such things you do." So what did Jesus say? Jesus exposed the Pharisees and the scribes as being self-centered and having no love for the very people they claimed to serve. That they would exempt a child from the responsibility of caring for their parents by giving the money to the church was inexcusable. Jesus referred to it as honoring him with our lips and not with our hearts. The fifth commandment again states, "Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God gives you." The Amplified Bible gives us perhaps a little clearer understanding of this text. The word honor can be regard, can also mean treat with honor, give due obedience, and courtesy. Let's step back a little bit and get a better picture of the context in which this exchange takes place. The law, as understood by the Jews, consisted of the Ten Commandments, certainly, but it also was all of the five books authored by Moses, known to the Jews as the Torah. In the three or four centuries preceding Jesus' arrival on earth, a class of legal experts known as the scribes arose. They saw it as their job to define what was meant by God's law, the Ten Commandments, and the Torah. And during those centuries, a distinction developed between the written Torah and the oral Torah. By the time Jesus came on the scene, the oral traditions were considered more authoritative than the written one. The oral traditions interpreted, supplemented, and even corrected the written Torah. The oral traditions had developed into thousands of minutely detailed rules and regulations governing every conceivable aspect of a person's life. And a couple centuries after Christ, these oral traditions were written down into what is today known as the Mishnah. And then both the ritual washings and purifications, which is the first four verses of Mark chapter 7, as well as the issue of Corban that we just read about, the gift to God, is present in the Mishnah, exactly, pretty much, as is found in Mark chapter 7. We get a sense of what Corban is from Mark 7, but further clarification might be helpful at this time. Corban literally is simply a gift. But in the context of this passage, and in the context in which the Jews used it, the hypothetical man is implying that his gift, his Corban, is to God. It was more than just a gift. It was an irrevocable vow to God to give to him the properties in question. And this is how Jesus' listeners would have understood it. The oral tradition was that if someone declared anything Corban to God, possession transferred to God. It became God's property at that point. It could not be used for any other purpose, including supporting one's own parents. However, there was one exception. The gift could be retained for one's personal use, and the property, assuming anything was left, would then transfer to the temple upon the giver's death. In a twisted sense of logic, the giver of the Corban was considered to be honoring his parents, even though the money and property could no longer support them. After all, what could be more important than giving to God? And what could be more important than keeping one's word to God? The worst part was that Corban was an irrevocable vow. Even if the man later regretted the earlier decision, the Jewish authorities would not allow a retraction. Is it no wonder that on the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus speaks out against making vows? Reading from Matthew chapter 5, verses 33 through 37. Again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn. But I say to you, do not take an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not take an oath by your head, for you cannot make your hair white or black. Let what you say simply be simply yes or no. Anything more than this comes from evil. It appears that God, during much of the Old Testament times, used and allowed vows because that is what the people understood. And during a time of spiritual and relational immaturity between God and his people, it was a way of helping the people see that God keeps his end of the bargain, of the vow. But even back in Deuteronomy, we get a sense that God never desired people to make vows. Reading from Deuteronomy chapter 23, verses 21 through 23, we read, when you make a vow to the Lord your God, be prompt in fulfilling whatever you promised him. For the Lord your God demands that you promptly fulfill all your vows, or you will be guilty of sin. However, it is not a sin to refrain from making a vow. But if once you have voluntarily made a vow, be careful to fulfill your promise to the Lord your God. The Old Testament, at the time of the Exodus, the people's understandings of God and generally God's was that God would do something for you. If you wanted God to do something for you, then you would promise to do something for God. And vows were very important, not just in the Israelite culture, but in all of the culture at that time. That's how they believed God and gods operated. And so it appears that God accommodates by permitting vows to be made. But as we read in Matthew, God really doesn't want people making vows. Not only because vows are ultimately contrary to the nature of grace, because grace is a free gift. There's nothing we can do to earn grace. But because the whole concept of vows had become corrupted and abused by the Jews, a question that arises is, why would any person take the vow of Corban? Well, the concept that anyone would do that seems somewhat foreign to us, to most of us today. But if we realize that there was no Social Security, however meager that may be today, no retirement funds, no Medicare, no health insurance, no long-term care insurance, but that a parent's sons were all of these, in effect, we might begin to understand how the son or sons might use Corban to get out of taking responsibility for their parents in their old age. Now, for those of us younger ones here, young, especially sons, if we realize that upon our parents' retirement, you would now be responsible for all of their living costs, all of their healthcare costs, everything. Everything that the parents used to earn for themselves. What kind of thoughts might go through our minds? Maybe the idea of Corban isn't so far-fetched today if we were under the same circumstances. You might be wondering, why are we discussing Corban, vows, and honoring our parents today? The North American division of our church has designated the fourth Sabbath in August as Abuse Prevention Emphasis Day. We're going to take a little time during the rest of this sermon discussing a problem that is becoming more prevalent in countries around the world. And this isn't a problem that is limited to any particular country, culture, race, or class of people. It's a problem that stretches beyond each of these boundaries. Over the years, on Abuse Prevention Emphasis Day, we've shared information on child abuse, spousal abuse, caring for those who have been abused, and protecting the abused. Today, we want to focus on a different type of abuse, one that is a growing problem, and that is the problem of the abuse of the elderly. Some of you may be saying to yourselves, abuse of the elderly? What is that? Or you may be thinking, there's no such thing as abuse of the elderly. Who would abuse a senior citizen? But let me share with you some information about abuse of the elderly, and then we'll discuss this further. I would like you to keep in mind the fifth commandment that we read. There is also one more text we should read before we continue our discussion. Proverbs chapter 23, verse 22. Solomon writes to his son to hearken to your father who begot you and do not despise your mother when she is old. The Message translation makes it even more understandable. Listen with respect to the father who raised you, and when your mother grows old, don't neglect her. According to the World Health Organization, abuse and neglect of older adults can be a single incident or repeated acts. It can occur in any relationship where there is an expectation of trust or where a person is in a position of power or authority. This abuse can be physical, such as hitting, emotional, verbal, financial, sexual, or spiritual. Some types of abuse of older adults involve violation of their rights. Financial abuse is probably the most common form of abuse of the elderly. And just as the young man in Mark's story abused his parents in the name of religion, today, religious people sometimes abuse their parents, sometimes intentionally, sometimes without thought. As mentioned in the Proverbs, neglect is also a type of abuse. This would involve not doing something, such as providing the older person with food, shelter, medication, care, or meaningful personal contact. Many older adults experience more than one form of abuse and neglect. The perpetrators may be children, a spouse, or even grandchildren. But it can also include friends, neighbors, care providers, landlords, or any individual in a position of power, trust, or authority. It can take place in the home, in a residential care setting, or in the community. Would you consider what this man did to his parents as abuse? Well, Maybe you would, and maybe you wouldn't. But Jesus did. As you see in this text, Jesus said that the Pharisees had made the word of God of none effect through their tradition. It is clear that it is the duty of children, if their parents are poor, to help them as far as they are able. If children who curse their parents deserve to die, as Jesus quoted in verse 10, how much more those who starve them, ignore them, or abuse them in any other manner? The basic element of abuse of the elderly is disrespect for and disregard of those who are now considered older persons. There are some cultures where the elderly are highly regarded, where they are honored and respected. Unfortunately, some of those cultural values are becoming rare. But in other countries, when a person reaches a certain age, it seems as if they have outlived their usefulness. They are seen as persons who have nothing to contribute anymore. They are problematic, and children and other family members would be happy to get rid of them. They are just too much trouble. These sound like harsh words, but we are dealing with a very real problem for many of our senior citizens. What does God expect of us? The commandment tells us to honor our parents. In Leviticus 19:32, we read, "Rise up in the presence of the aged, show respect for the elderly, and revere your God. I am the Lord." What does it mean to honor and respect the elderly? Is it a feeling or attitude of admiration and deference towards somebody or something, consideration or thoughtfulness, to treat a person with due care, regard, obedience, and courtesy. Throughout the Bible, God worked with and called many people who some might have considered past their prime, past their usefulness. God chose to honor them. The first person who comes to mind is Abraham. When God promised Abraham to make a great nation through him, Abraham was 75 years old. God could have used a younger man, maybe Lot, who was much younger and had far more energy. But God chose Abraham. Why? Because God knew that Abraham possessed some maturity and the experience to deal with what God was going to place upon him. God knew that for many, many years, Abraham would have to hold on to a promise without any visible evidence of it becoming true, and which, as the years went by, became more difficult to believe that it would ever come true. The kind of person that God needed, he found in Abraham. The belief in God, the obedience to his every word that Abraham possessed, comes only as we mature. In Job chapter 12, verse 12, it says, "With the ancient is wisdom, and in length of days, understanding." Then, there is Moses. Have you ever considered why God allowed Moses to spend 40 years looking after sheep before sending him to Egypt as God's mouthpiece? When Moses slew the Egyptian slave master, he was a young man, 40 years of age, strong and self-confident. But this wasn't exactly what God needed. He needed a man who would be obedient to his voice and always put God first, a man strong in faith and courage. These are the traits that God developed in Moses during the 40 years in Midian. When the time was up, when Moses had matured, a process that only comes with time, then God called him to the task. Let's consider Noah. God called Noah when he was 600 years old. It is interesting to note that Noah had three able-bodied sons. They were many years younger than Noah, strong and fit and quite able to do as God needed. Yet God chose Noah, the senior citizen. By doing this, God showed respect for the elderly because he gave Noah the vision, the idea, the revelation of what would happen. To his sons was given the role of being Noah's support and strength. But the message came to Noah. We also have the Apostle John, who wrote his gospel account toward the end of his life. God chose to give him the vision that led to the book of Revelation, when most people, perhaps even John himself, would have thought that his best days and his best work was simply long past. In both the Old and New Testament, there are many admonitions to care for the destitute, and widows are mentioned often. By definition, many widows are elderly. Throughout Jesus' ministry, he was particularly attuned to the needs of widows, raising to life the son of one widow, healing others, and showing respect and honor for the widow who gave her two mites. Is it still God's intention that we regard the elderly with respect? The Bible says that God does not change. Based on this alone, we can answer confidently that it is still God's intention that we treat the elderly with respect and honor. We may be feeling good because we've never hit our parents or denied them the care they needed. Now, we've never abused poor Loreen or John here. We hope. But have we raised our voices to them in anger? Have we called them unkind words or names? Have we sat in a bus seat and left an elderly person standing? Do we neglect to seek their advice? Or do we feel they are old-fashioned and outdated in their thinking and do not understand the times in which they live? If you aren't sure, ask them. Let them tell you what they see, hear, and feel. Psalm chapter 71, verses 9 and 18 sums up pretty well what many senior citizens probably would say to us. Do not cast me away when I am old. Do not forsake me when my strength is gone. Even when I am old and gray, do not forsake me, O God, till I declare your power to the next generation, your might to all who are to come. We do need to look at this problem as individual families, and we need to look at it as a church. In our families, are we seeing to it that our elderly relatives are being cared for? Perhaps past hurts have separated us, but that does not justify our neglecting them now. In Bible times, they did not have Social Security or retirement funds, as we have now. But we still need to see that they have comfort and joy in their old age. Not long ago, there was a news story of an old man who lived alone. He died and was not found for a whole year. Where was his family, his community, his church? As a church, what are we doing for our elderly members, particularly the shut-ins? Does anyone provide transportation for them if that is needed? Do we visit them? Is communion taken to them if they are unable to attend services? Does anyone check that they are receiving the care that they deserve? How about helping with their houses or repairs? How about making sure they have good meals? Questions to ask ourselves, to examine ourselves. Do we truly love one another? Time is just as much a resource as our money and property. We may not say Corbin to our money and property, but what about our time? I wonder, am I guilty of saying Corbin about my time and as a result, dishonoring the elderly? How about you? God is calling us today at this time to honor our parents and respect the elderly. I want to mention one other observation I came across while studying this topic this week. It's the proximity of the fifth commandment to the fourth. Now, as Seventh-day Adventists, most of us here, what is the fourth commandment? Remember the Sabbath day. Now, the fifth is the one about honoring our parents. But, you know, both are at the center of the Ten Commandments. And if you understand Hebrew literature, often what's at the center is the most important. Adventists do make a big deal about the fourth commandment. But do we make an equally big deal out of the fifth commandment? I'm afraid not. I've come to believe that both are equally important. If we don't emphasize the honor and respect due to parents and elders as much as we emphasize the honor and respect due to God, I fear that we could fall into the same trap that the Jews did. The Jews took their vows to God, their vertical relationship, extremely seriously and rigidly, I might add. But when it came to their responsibilities to others around them, the horizontal relationships, they apparently found many, many ways to get out of it. It just wasn't very important to them. Could we, as Adventists, and as Christians in general, fall into the same trap? Have we already fallen into it? I wonder. Something for you to think about. James Dobson, in his book, Coming Home, writes, "The world seems to worship youth and is terrified of aging. But there was a time when getting older was associated with wisdom and experience. In fact, some of the greatest accomplishments in history came very late in life. Immanuel Kant wrote one of his best philosophical works at the age of 74. Verdi penned his classic Ave Maria at 85. Michelangelo was 87 when he completed the Pietà, his greatest work of art. Ronald Reagan was the most powerful man in the world at age 75. This notion that life should be winding down at 50 or 60 years of age is crazy. Well, what about those of you who are elderly? What does this sermon have to do with you? What if you are no longer physically capable, nor have the strength or stamina to really do a whole lot, or perhaps any work? Does God have anything left for you to do? I have one suggestion. Invite some of us to listen to your stories. You know, many of us young ones may not be too receptive to unsolicited advice, but we just might be willing to listen to your stories. For many of us in the younger generation, you know, we've heard so much advice, often conflicting and contradictory, that we're really kind of fed up with listening to more advice. What we want, really, is inspiration. What we want to hear is that, you know, there is more to life than the daily grind. We want to be given dreams and visions to strive for. And I think that somewhere in your long life, you do have stories you can tell us that can give us that kind of inspiration. Invite us to listen to those stories so that we can be inspired. In the last days of Earth's history, the young and the elderly do work together. We read in the book of Joel, chapter 2, verses 28 and 29. "And afterward, I will pour out my spirit on all people. Your sons and daughters will prophesy. Your old men will dream dreams. Your young men will see visions. Even on my servants, both men and women, I will pour out my spirit in those days." God does not cast off, ignore, or write off the elderly. He appreciates, empowers, respects, and values them. And so should we.